Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you an atheist? If you've got an answer to that question that you'd like to share with us, we would love it if you give us a call this hour. This hour we reserve for atheists, agnostics, brights, free thinkers. Give me another one. People have all kinds of names.
The godless.
The godless. That sounds a little accusatory. But I mean, it gets true, but it does, sounds a little accusatory. I don't know why.
It's a term that was used more in the past to describe atheists. I don't know too many atheists who would use the term today, but some are always trying to reclaim terms of the past, I suppose.
Oh, right. Yes. 888-318-7884, the number. If you are an atheist or you think you're near being an atheist and you'd like to explain to us why, 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest. And the cool thing is, if you really like these kind of conversations, especially if you live in Minnesota, you can. Trent's going to be debating Dan Barker from the Freedom from Religion Foundation on the campus of Minnesota State University, Mankato. That's coming up on. Did you know this? September 24th.
Oh, I better get to reading. A little
you should
bit,
probably right? learn some stuff.
Should probably
about.
Figure this out. No, this is going to be exciting. Dan and I actually debated the question: God, supreme being, or imaginary friend. That was the topic, and that was when I first started Catholic Answers. That was in early 2013, I believe, when my book Answering Atheism was coming out. So we debated the topic back then, and it was a great debate. It's online. You can feel free to watch it after the show if you care to. This debate will be a little different than that one because we're going to debate, does the Christian God exist? Because many people say, well, even if you prove there's a God, how do you know which religion he belongs to? And I think there's good evidence both from philosophy and from history to show that God exists and God revealed himself through the person of Jesus Christ. And so that is what we will be debating there. And I think it'll be a good time. We'll record it, hopefully have it on YouTube pretty quickly thereafter. Looking forward to a good engagement.
September 24th at the Mankato
campus
of Minnesota State University.
Is it Minnesota State or University of Minnesota?
It's being sponsored by the Secular Student Alliance at Minnesota State University, Mankato.
Yep.
Yeah, so
Minnesota
it's
State.
Minnesota State, yeah. Okay. 888-318-7884 is our number, and we go now to Nicole in Boston. Nicole, why are you an atheist?
Hi. I'm an atheist because it just really doesn't make sense to me that there are so many religions, and this one, which, like many, claims to be the one true religion, and the only, like, really good argument I've heard from my mother, Marcia, she's a very big fan of this program.
Who is?
Is that there's no way we could have been here without someone creating us.
Okay. Let me address both those points, Nicole. So one is you seem to be concerned about which religion is true. How could one religion be the quote-unquote true religion when there are so many different religions? I would say we must be careful, though, to understand that atheism also fits into this framework, that there are different answers to the question, who is God? And, you know, some will say Allah, some will say Jesus or Yahweh, and some, like an atheist, will answer, well, nobody's there, or we don't know if anybody's there. So lots of different groups have different answers to this. And it's just the case that some of these groups are going to be more correct than others. So atheists, you know, the argument could be turned on its head to say, how could the atheist be right and everybody else is just wrong? Well, no, when you're asking questions about something, there's going to be people who are closer and further to the truth. That's just kind of the way the truth works. But I would say that as a Catholic, I'm not saying every other religion is just wrong about everything. That would be the claim that atheists make, except for maybe very basic moral principles. When it comes to the supernatural, an atheist will say all religions are wrong about all of it. Whereas I would say actually that Native American animists, Eastern religions, they are correct that there is a transcendent spiritual reality. I would go further, though, that reality is incomplete without a all-powerful, infinite God who created everything. So my Muslim and Jewish friends are right that there is one infinite God. So Islam and Judaism are right about a fair number of things related to God. Where they fall short is failing to acknowledge that God became man in the person of Jesus. So as a Catholic, I think other religions, there's actually, they have a lot of truth in them. So I think my position is actually a bit more inclusive than some other atheist positions. So that's one point I would throw out there. Before I continue on, does that make sense to you, what I'm saying, that there could be different belief systems, some that are further to the truth, some that are further towards it, further away from it? Do you see where I'm going from there?
Yeah, I do. Okay. One thing is that I tend to entertain the possibility that nobody's right, and that if there was and if there is a God up there who created us, why would he say so in the first place? And how do we know that the Catholic Church has the right idea of God?
Sure. First, I would say when it comes to specific religious questions, because the questions are exclusive in nature, somebody has to be right on several of these questions. So like, does God exist? Either believers are right that he does, or atheists are right that he doesn't. Did Jesus rise from the dead? Either Christians are right that he did, or non-Christians are right that he did not. So for many of these questions about God and his revelation, somebody has to be right, somebody has to be wrong. Those are the only two options. So it would behoove us, there's your word of the day, it would behoove us to try to see where's the evidence point on these different questions. So I think on many of these, whether God exists, whether Jesus is God, somebody has the right answer here, because the answer is usually yes or no, and people are divided, sometimes evenly. So we need to figure out which answers are right. And can we do that? I think we can. I've not been showed a compelling argument to show that we cannot. Why the Catholic God? Well, there's two aspects of the God of Catholicism that I would look at, I guess. Well, maybe three aspects. One would be, what is God like? I would say the only definition of God that makes sense is the God of monotheism, classical monotheism. There's one God. The world was created, is sustained by God, and this God is infinite, doesn't lack anything, is necessary, has to exist, is eternal, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-good. That God just is. God is not a magic genie in the sky. Or, you know, some people say, well, God is an old man in the sky. Well, most people don't think that. But God is not like a cosmic genie in the sky or outside of the universe holding the universe like a fishbowl. God just is infinite being or existence itself. That's because that's the only thing that makes sense of why there is why there are beings or things that exist at all. God just is existence, perfect, unlimited, without deficiencies of any kind. And you only find that infinite concept of God in classical monotheism, which would be Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, and maybe Baha'i and Jainism. So first it would be philosophical. I say, okay, so that is what makes sense of the world as it exists, why there is something rather than nothing. Then you do a historical look. Did God reveal himself? And I think of all the different religions that claim God revealed himself, like God spoke to me, God told me to write this book. Only one has a person who says, I am the infinite creator. I am he. He died and vindicated those claims by rising from the dead. So that would raise Christianity up over the others to show, hey, here's God revealed himself. Catholicism would come into play in just saying that Jesus, God who became man, gave us a church, a universal church. The word Catholic just means universal. You know, so Jesus gave us a church so all people could know God, and it would be the same throughout the whole world. So I leaped through three big things: God, Jesus, and Catholicism. I threw a lot down there at you. What are your thoughts?
Well, my biggest thing is that I don't really see how one God, since like an infinite God is possible, since nothing except existence itself is infinite, and we're not even sure how long that's been going on. We're not even sure if that's been infinite.
Okay, well, Nicole, let me say this. When I say God is infinite, what that means is that he is without limit. He is without limit. So it doesn't mean that God is a collection of parts or bits of knowledge or power units. Or God is not made up of anything. God just is existence. Like, we have existence, and physicists and astrophysicists debate about whether the universe is infinite or what it's shaped like. I would say that there can't be actual infinites in reality, because that leads to contradictions. If you want to look up one online, there's one called Hilbert's Hotel, which shows you couldn't have an actually infinite collection of things. You'd have contradictions. But I would say, so when we say God is infinite, it just means he's not limited. There's no limit on God's power. There's no limit on his knowledge. There's no limit on his love. God, there's no limit on his existence. God doesn't die or come into being. God just is, and he exists without those limitations as perfect being itself. And to me, that makes sense that if the world exists, we look around at the universe itself, there's no reason it has to exist. We search for an answer, why does it exist? And I think the best answer for that comes from the fact that the universe just comes from the ultimate source of existence, perfect existence itself. What I would like to do, I didn't get a chance to, I hope we found Mark from the earlier show and we got him a book. He might have dropped off on us. If we have to go to a break and go on to other callers, but if you would stay on the line, our call screener will send you my book, Why We're Catholic. The first five chapters talk about God. You may find that to be helpful. Maybe you could read that, and I'd be happy if you called back on another show. We could go into it more in depth. Would you be happy with that? Okay, that would be great.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Appreciate that call. We are discussing, well, we're asking you, our listener, why are you an atheist? And if you are an atheist, we welcome your call this hour. I do want to remind you that we mentioned this yesterday. The powers that be have extended through Sunday, September 9th, the special student price for a one-year subscription to Catholic Answers magazine. It's a fantastic magazine for a student, in large part because students need help gaining the conviction that there are answers to their questions from the Catholic perspective. For example, they may have questions like, are we asking today about God or about the pro-life position or about the sacraments? The fact that month after month they can find high-quality answers to all kinds of questions in Catholic Answers magazine helps to build that confidence in them. And it's an important confidence to have, because many people do, in fact, leave the church because they become convinced that they just can't get their questions answered. Just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com, put in the promo code MSchool, that's the letter M and the word school in the promo code box, and hit enter. You get your special price of $24.95 for your student today at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Every single day, I get to help our listeners of the Sunrise Morning Show wake up, find out what's going on in the church and the world, and then walk with them as we all seek to grow in knowledge and love of Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. I mean, how could it get any better?
The Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. Tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio. Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you an atheist? Our topic today, in which you can imagine, we're hoping that our callers will be atheists today. We'd like to have a conversation with them. Trent Horn, our guest, the author of the brand new book. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks until it will be officially out, but you can pre-order it. Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. He's also the author of Persuasive Pro-Life and Why We're Catholic and Answering Atheism, a relevant book for today. But this time he chose to ride on the coattails of Layla Miller, and the two of them put this book out together, Made This Way. Go to shop.catholic.com to pre-order. Shall we move on to our next caller?
We shall.
Trent Horn, all right. Anon in Seattle, Washington, watching on YouTube Live. Anon, I bet your last name is Imus.
Possibly related to the radio announcer Don Imus.
Anonymous.
Anonymous.
You are on. Why are you an atheist, Anonymous?
Hello, everybody. I'm an atheist because the arguments for the supernatural haven't convinced me yet. And as I understand it, there is no actual evidence of the supernatural at this point. So that's kind of why I'm still at the default position of being an atheist, because that's kind of what we're all born to. And I just haven't become convinced yet. So.
Okay. Well, number one, I would say that atheism is a position about God and the evidence for God. So I would push back a little on the idea that atheism is a default position. I think the default position when it comes to God is, well, what is God? What is this? It would be a lack of understanding. And then when people are informed about God, they make a judgment about whether there is good evidence for God or not sufficient evidence. And people make those judgments, and we should inquire whether they're making reasonable judgments or not. Number two, just talking about then the evidences for God, Anonymous, it sounds like you have surveyed evidences and you have found them lacking. Is there a particular evidence that stands out among them, one that's notable, but you still find problems with it? And we could discuss that particular evidence or argument. Maybe we could talk about that for God.
Yeah, sure. To your first point, though, I disagree with you there. It's like jury members coming into a trial. They have no clue whether or not this person is actually guilty or not. So they're just at the default position of just assuming that this person is just a random person pulled in from the crowd. The prosecutor is in the positive position claim of saying that this person is actually guilty. And it's on their job to convince the jurors who are at a default position of just assuming this is a random person, that that person actually is related to the instance being presented for the positive position that the prosecutor is presenting. And I believe that you're confusing atheism with the pluralization of atheist. Because there is no ism to being an atheist. It's like saying, what color is bald? There is no hair color of bald. There is no channel of an off TV.
You're saying atheism is just not having a belief in God. Like how baldness is not having hair.
Yeah, and that's just called being an atheist. But, there is no ism.
Well, here's Anonymous. So. Is there a difference between saying a infant is an atheist, the atheism of an infant, and your atheism? Is there a difference between the two?
The infant is an atheist as I'm an atheist.
So you're both atheists in the same sense of that word?
Yes, that okay. Neither one of us have been convinced of the existence of the supernatural by the positive claims of the people that do believe in the supernatural.
But then what I would say is that if you are an atheist in the same sense an infant is an atheist, atheism is just not a very interesting position to investigate, because all it is just to say someone is not convinced. There's two reasons that someone may not be convinced of something. One would be they have been presented evidence and they have found it lacking. In the other case, they have simply not been presented evidence. In the case of the infant, they are not even capable of evaluating the evidence, even if it were presented to them. And there may be people who are adults who have never been presented the evidence. So that's just not even really a position. That's just not ever having interacted with the material. What I find more interesting is classical atheism, and I'm willing to give it this definition. An atheist is someone who says, who has examined the reasons that are offered for the existence of God and finds them unconvincing. Now, that's an interesting position. I'm interested in that because I'd like to know why they're not convincing. So maybe we can branch into that second topic. You could give me one of the reasons you have looked at it and tell me why it has not convinced you.
Sure. Pretty much all the classical arguments have been presented to me so far, and I just look at it as the arguments aren't demonstrable. And because as I understand it, the way that logic works, we first have to observe reality to see what is possible within reality. And then reality tells us what the boundaries are for the language that we want to use to describe that experienced reality. And then from those boundaries that, and with our language and terms, we can now start coming up with philosophical arguments about what is possible based on the observed reality.
Well, when you say observe reality,
hasn't been observed.
Hold on. When you say observe reality, does that mean only with our five senses, or can we think about things in a conceptual way to determine if they're possible?
Yes, that's called a hypothesis. But this is the problem with religious people. They think that a hypothesis that hasn't been tested is just as valid to conclude the realisticness of reality as a tested hypothesis that has come back with conclusive evidence from that test.
What kind of tests are valid? For example, suppose I make this hypothesis. Numbers are immaterial realities, but they do exist because they correspond to true mathematical formulas. That's called mathematical Platonism. And it is something that many mathematicians hold to. It is a relevant school of thought in philosophy of mathematics and mathematics. How would we test the idea that these immaterial things exist?
Sure. You first observe reality, and then you apply adjectives to describe that reality. So if you have two apples sitting on your desk, you have the adjective of two to describe that experienced reality of two apples sitting on your desk. That's all numbers are. They're just adjectives describing reality.
So would numbers exist? Would the number two exist if there was only one atom in the universe?
Would the number two exist? And if you're referencing that specific atom, then no. If you're experiencing, if you can experience something, you can imagine what it would be like to have two of that, or three of that, or four of that.
Okay. So
as long as the person that's observing it has an imagination, you can expound on that concept. That's how we come up with comic book superheroes. But that doesn't necessarily make Spider-Man exist.
Right, but a person can imagine whether something exists and then test that, whether it's a thing in reality, like, okay, there are white swans. Well, I could imagine that there are black swans. I wonder if they exist. For a long time, people thought no. Turns out they do. I saw one in Australia last year, actually. So that would be the case for objects in the universe, but we could also imagine other things. And maybe we can't test them, but we could hypothesize about them. Are there parallel universes, for example? We may never be able to test that, but we can discuss it. It's a valid thing to consider. Maybe we could make a philosophical argument for their existence. So is there anything wrong with saying, okay, well, let's imagine that, you know, we see things that exist in the world, and when they exist, they have reasons for their existence. You know, cars have manufacturers, trees come from other trees, you know, elements come from exploded stars. We see things exist as the product of other things. The universe, then, the collection of all things, is it the product of something else? What would that ultimate cause of the universe or reality be like? So is that a okay path to go down to see if our reasoning leads us to God?
Sure, but again, you're imagining something out there that is all you can do is just leave it up on the board as a hypothesis to eventually test. But the religious people are taking it further, where they're going, regardless of the test, I believe my logical conclusion here, my hypothesis is just as valid as this table I'm leaning on right now.
Have I?
And that's not true.
I can't speak for all religious people, but I haven't done that. The test that I would propose is whether a valid argument leads to the conclusion that a being with divine properties exists. So as I said, there's lots of different arguments that can be proposed. Unfortunately, we're coming up here on our break very quickly. So I guess here's the argument I propose, another basic argument. The universe, it's either three things that explain why does the universe exist. There's either no reason, infinite number of reasons. There's no explanation, infinite explanations, or an ultimate explanation of the universe. And so I think that we can use philosophy, that we should not get into the trap of thinking this is just a scientific question, that if we seek explanations, no explanation doesn't work. Infinite explanations does not really explain anything, like an infinitely long train without a locomotive still isn't going anywhere. Rather, there has to be an ultimate explanation, and we can philosophize and logically deduce divine attributes of that explanation, as I do in my book, Answering Atheism.
Sorry, we got to go to a break, though. Anonymous, thank you so much for that call. Our number, 888-31-TRUTH. Our topic, why are you an atheist? Right back with more of that after this.
Hi, this is Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Majus Center of Reason and Faith, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humana Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humana Vitae. We asked five distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humana Vitae from five perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic of contraception comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Is the Church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you an atheist? Our topic this hour, and the man to take that call is Trent Horn. He wrote the book, actually, Answering Atheism, among his many other books. He'd love to talk with you if you're willing to call. And Matt from Fargo, North Dakota, did call and I think waited a long time. So thank you for your patience. Matt, why are you an atheist?
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, it was kind of a long time.
I apologize.
I apologize if I go on a little bit here. I'm not as used to being on the radio as you guys are. But
that's okay.
I would say that I'm an atheist because, well, I wasn't my entire life. I was a Christian originally, as I think a lot of atheists were. While I don't find the evidence for a God existing to be terribly compelling, and not just a Christian God, but any God, I think you find that argument to be a little boring. I would also say, in studying ancient history, I found the mythological origins of, at the time, my own Christian belief to be troubling, and the similarity to other mythologies, which I think you and I would both agree don't actually exist, such as worship of Norse mythology or Canaanite religions and so forth. And as I studied it more, it became a little more clear to me that there really wasn't that much of a difference between what I had previously believed and what I would easily dismiss as mythology among other cultures. And ultimately, it made me an atheist.
Okay, well, Matt, I think this does make things a bit interesting because we've been talking about arguments for God, or at least trying to get to arguments for God with some of the previous callers. And I'm happy also to engage people, and I find this very common with atheists. In fact, when I debate Dan Barker in 2 weeks in Minnesota, I know what he said in previous debates and what he'll say in this debate will probably be, look, we can have probability that God does not exist, but we can be certain the Christian God does not exist because of similar to these arguments that you've raised, looking at the text, things like that. Can you give me a specific example of what you mean by a mythological comparison, that Christianity is just like other mythologies? And so if we don't believe in those mythologies, we shouldn't believe in Christianity? Because I'm not sure that argument follows. Because on the one hand, any religion, any way that man responds to God, there's going to be similarities. I mean, for example, all human beings have a natural instinct to want to show God gratitude. You know, even atheists sometimes, you know, when you go out in nature and you see the Grand Canyon, you see, whatever, you know, you go see the fjords in Norway, whatever it might be. Even people who are not religious, they suddenly get this welling sense of gratitude when they see a beautiful thing in nature, yet there's nowhere to direct it to. So it's like natural human instinct for humans to want to express gratitude to their creator. And oftentimes that takes the form of sacrifice, that the way you show gratitude, this is a human trait that we say, here, I want to give this to you. It's a sacrifice. This is something that means a lot to me. My best fruits, my best calves, and unfortunately in some Canaanite cultures, my children. And I offer this back to you in gratitude. So Judaism has sacrifice. You see sacrifice in other religions. But that's just a natural human element. So on the one hand, you know, if we step back from just things that are part of human nature, what are things that are like the mythological comparisons you find to be the most troubling?
Well, I hope I'm not going to get too off into the weeds here, because okay. I certainly don't want to lose your listeners. But for example, a little earlier in the show, you'd said something I took a bit of umbrage with, where you said that Judaism has its origins in monotheism, but that isn't entirely correct, because before the Babylonian exile, they were polytheistic, just like all the religions around them. And we can see that reflected in the Bible. They mention El, Asherah, right alongside Yahweh, who were originally different deities. El, as we can see reflected in the word Israel, mm-hmm, was right. The supreme God who yeah. eventually became associated with Yahweh, and so on and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I know I'm getting a little off topic there. But so it's not just the actions like you described, sacrifice, which I certainly understand. I've been to Greece, I've been to the Grand Canyon, and it's incredibly awe-inspiring mm-hmm. landscapes.
Yeah.
And I even thought when I was there, I was like, I can see exactly how someone would look at this and think, something amazing exists outside of me, because they're awe-inspiring sights. But
sure.
Ultimately, to me, it's more the actual religions yeah. themselves.
They always
kind of follow similar suits.
Well, Matt, let me jump in here, because I was speaking kind of in shorthand. When I said Judaism, I was referring to Second Temple Judaism, through it, which was the context from which Christianity emerged, which you read scholars like Larry Hurtado and other people, that by that time, the Jews were fiercely monotheistic. That's why they took, to borrow your word, umbrage at Jesus and the claims that he was making. And that's really a puzzle among biblical scholarship. How was Jesus elevated to the level of divinity so quickly in the Christian faith that, you know, you see the Rabbi Jesus elevated to the level of being worshipped within a Second Temple Jewish context that was fiercely monotheistic? You are correct about the origins of the Jewish faith and Old Testament worship. When you see even Pope Benedict XVI acknowledges that the early Israelites were polytheists/henotheists, that they existed in a cultural context that believed in that the existence of many gods. That's why they were. That's why some of them were tempted to worship other deities and worship other idols. That was true for early Israelite religion. However, God's revelation with them, they came to a fuller understanding that their God was superior to other deities, that God led them through this, not just in power and abilities, but in existence itself. That we see, for example, a good book I'd recommend for you would be Mark Smith's book, The Early History of God, Yahweh, and the Other Deities in Ancient Israel. I talk about that a little in my book, Hard Sayings, but Mark Smith is a scholar that's done a lot of work on this. That the Canaanite god El, for example, and you look in scripture, other deities are maligned and they are denigrated, like Baal, for example. They are criticized, they are targeted in polemics by the prophets, things like that. But El actually is not. So the early Israelites may have identified their god Yahweh and the Canaanite god El and just said that this major supreme god overall were in fact the same being. So I would say that the journey of God's people to better understand him does not count against the truth of the faith that, you know, that God revealing himself to human beings is kind of like how parents educate children. There's sort of a divine condescension there. We have to come down to their level. So God revealed himself to the early Israelites that he's unique in power, unique in goodness. Finally, especially by the time of the prophet Isaiah, there is the firm knowledge that God is unique also in existence itself. That this is more of a development and understanding. We actually, though, have a special guest that's joined us here in studio, and we might have to go to a break here soon. So, Matt, what I would like to do, I would enjoy you calling back or even corresponding more off the air. I will get your email address from our call screener's here now. Oh no, Nick! Get out there! Somebody help! Stay on the line. We will get you. I'd like to get your email. I'd like to send you my book, Hard Sayings. It covers kind of these mythological comparisons, and maybe you could call back, or maybe we could correspond. But would that be helpful?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Matt.
I think my sister might really appreciate it. She's the one who challenged me to talk with you. So.
Well, good. I'll send you Hard Sayings, because especially on the biblical stuff, you may find it interesting. And then you could always call back. So
appreciate that call very much, Matt. Thank you so much. That special guest is our call screener. That's why we had the problem there. He wanted
call screener.
Assistant producer.
Many, so stay in there, names. Matt. We'll get to you when she's back on the
No,
on
Nick's
the line.
Doing it. Nick's, oh, got, Nick's, got Nick's it. Not going to Matt.
Yeah.
Nick, the man of many.
Hi, Marie. Assistant producer Marie.
Hi.
What are you here to tell us?
Right now, if you sign up for Radio Club, you will receive an exclusive MP3 with Jimmy Akin talking about the early church fathers, which is really awesome. And all you have to do is text Radio Club, all one word, to 44222.
44222, text the word Radio Club, mm-hmm. and you'll become... Well, you'll get what you need to become a member of Radio Club.
Right, and you'll also receive the MP3.
And Radio Club is you're not just going to receive that. You will also receive the weekly email, which has some of the best of the stuff that we do around here, both in writing and on other media.
Yep.
You get my letter, which is – you don't have to read it. And if it's of a disappointment to you, you can just not read it. But a few people read it. And then also we get to interact that way. Like lots of times – I mean, just today you were forwarding Radio Club emails to me.
Yeah.
Where people will have either a comment, a suggestion, an idea, or occasionally just to say, hey, you guys did a good job on this or that. And we love all that. So join Radio Club.
Yeah. So the last thing I would say is that it helps us to build community, and I'm actually the one, you know, going on there and responding to people. So you'll actually get an answer from a person if you, you know, respond to our Radio Club email, and it's a really good way to get in touch with all of us and ask more questions if you want to. So
I respond to people too, but here's the problem. You forward the emails to me, I reply, and then you have to send me a second email saying, you just replied to me. Did you mean to reply to the person who emailed?
We're working on
that's
it.
That's me, Trent. Yeah. That's what it's like working with me.
Catholic Answers Radio Club, proudly employing real people since the robot revolution of 2016.
Yeah. We have no robots here. It's Marie. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So say again how you join Radio Club.
So text Radio Club, all one word, to 44222.
Radio Club, all one word, to 44222. And I'd like to say this because I'm old-ish. And okay. You can just go to a website, too, right? There's a website that you can join at.
It's CatholicAnswersLive.com.
CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Thank
you,
guys.
What a cool website. Thanks, Marie. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Why Are You an Atheist? With Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I had to go through fear and thank God that I overcame the fear and I just left it up to God. And now there's no more fear. There's just acceptance. And I'm just learning to listen. If you want to be closer to God, you just need to keep following His rules. And your application, your radio station has helped me to always be positive and continue to listen to the rules and obey.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you an atheist? If you've got an answer to that question and you'd like to share it with us, you're welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH. Our guest this hour is Trent Horn. He podcasts over at TrentHornPodcast.com. The podcast is called Council of Trent. He's got a book coming out where he mooched off of Layla Miller and her fame to get himself another. That's getting old, me saying that, isn't it?
What's getting old?
Me saying that you just are riding on Layla Miller's coattails with this book.
I like to think that it was a mutual and beneficial partnership.
I am aware of that, but
so
I was teasing you.
It was a great team up of the brains and the beauty. Pointing to myself,
yes,
right here.
Right, you brought.
I brought the dashing.
You better
good
be
looks.
Careful about that because Layla did bring the brains, but
and
you better be careful about suggesting that you are the beauty in that pair.
I'm not exclusive. I think
enough,
Layla's husband Dean would consider her a fetching woman in her own right. It's all.
You
got to
be careful
in
there
the age
too.
Of okay, in the age enough. Of Me Too. You have to compliment people in a very classy way, like the word.
Yeah, you got,
like the word fetching, for example.
Yeah, right. Right. So. But people use that all the time for me, fetching.
Well, yeah. No. I mean, did you give me that water, by the way?
Yeah. Thanks for fetching me that water.
I appreciate it.
888-318-7884, the number. We're talking about atheism with folks who say they are atheists and want to tell us why. We appreciate those calls. We're glad you call. And now we talk with John in North Alabama, watching on YouTube Live. John, why are you an atheist?
Hi, guys. Hi, Trent. Well, I'm an atheist because I don't see evidence for God existing.
Okay.
And I mean, you guys have been talking a lot about various different bits of evidence that of course convince you guys, and I'm not convinced of. So I've been trying to think about like one particular bit of evidence that doesn't convince me.
Sure.
And I think that it would have to be the logical leap that you have to go through from assuming that natural processes or natural events are directly caused by some supernatural God. I just don't see that connection there, and I feel like anything that you can explain by natural processes or anything natural in general, that means that God doesn't need to be there in order to explain like why something is. So there's that. I also don't trust the reliability of like the Bible or any of the early claims about Jesus or in the Old Testament, the Jews. So I don't know. You guys can pick either one of those.
That's fine. Let's talk about them. Number one, about natural phenomena. I agree that when we observe phenomena in the universe, when we're observing things within the space-time universe, how natural phenomena functions, we should use science to seek a natural explanation. But we have lots of questions we ask as human beings. Let's see. There was a philosopher. He was Romano Guardini. Well, I went to Franciscan University of Steubenville, and I had Ralph Martin as a professor. And he has a very distinct voice. And I remember he was always saying, and now a reading from Romano Guardini. So any of my Steubenville alum listening will appreciate that, I think. And Guardini said that the human animal is unique among other animals, that other animals, when their needs are met, they go to sleep. When human needs are met, we ask a question. So humans are distinct. We ask lots of questions. Now, can many of these questions be answered by science and natural explanations? Sure. Like, you know, how far away is the Earth from the sun? What temperature does water boil at? But just because science is great at answering many questions we have with natural explanations, it doesn't follow that every single question we have can be explained with a natural explanation or explained by science. In fact, I would venture to say the most important questions we ask are not scientific questions. For example, how should I live? What am I? Why is there something rather than nothing? I would say those are philosophical questions. And John, would you be open that on some of these questions, there may be a natural explanation, or there may be an explanation beyond the natural world? Is that at least possible?
No, I don't believe in a supernatural existence.
I'm asking whether it's possible.
Well, considering that our reality is the natural world, anything that exists outside of that reality is, by definition, supernatural.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that anything outside of reality can exist. I mean, the reality that we live in is what we have to work with.
John, let me ask you this. How do you know all of reality is just the natural world? How do you know that?
Well, I mean, any supernatural claim or any supernatural explanation has always been superseded by a natural explanation. The natural explanations are more powerful and can actually explain things rather than supernatural things, then, I mean, it kind of seems like at every turn, the supernatural is shunned, I guess, by the natural.
Can you give me an example?
Let's see. So diseases and germs and stuff. You know, we didn't have a concept of germs or anything like that until Louis Pasteur. Up until that point, there was the whole idea that, you know, we were infested with demons or sins, maybe. There's still a lot of people today that think that, like, sin causes autism and stuff. And, I mean, that's just silly. Even as a Christian, I thought that was silly.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you that a particular moral behavior, I don't know how one would connect a moral behavior to a diagnosis like autism, but I would say actually some sins can cause illnesses. For example, I think fornication is one of the leading causes for sexually transmitted diseases. But there, of course, it's, you know, I would rejoin saying that it's the physical activity itself that does that. I would say that in the ancient world that, yeah, people believed in the demonic, and people still believe in the demonic today. But just because some people might have misidentified certain illnesses like epilepsy as being the result of demonic activity doesn't mean there aren't supernatural realities still. I also think this argument, and I see it a lot sometimes, the other thing I'd add is I think most ancient people did not believe that illnesses were caused by, you know, just demons and God or sin or immaterial things. I think most of them believed in material, natural explanations that were incorrect, like imbalances in the humors, you know, four fundamental liquids in the body, or breathing bad air, or, you know, so they had natural explanations that were, I guess we look at it this way in the past. There are explanations people have proposed, and some of them have been shown to be incorrect. Some of them are scientific explanations that are shown to be incorrect, and others might be more theological explanations. But we more and more refine our beliefs. We refine our scientific beliefs, And if we're allowed to refine our scientific beliefs to say, oh, well, we got rid of the theory of the humors and crania and phrenology, the study that, you know, your lump on the head proves you're a serial killer or something like that. So when we were allowed to refine science to get rid of the pseudoscience, shouldn't we be allowed to refine theology to show, well, theology answers questions about God, God's relationship to the world. Maybe God is not the subject that science examines in, like, illnesses, but God is a natural explanation for things like the entire universe itself, or things that go beyond the material, like the moral aspects of our life. Like, morality is not a material concept that science can explore. So if we're allowed to refine science to better understand the world, why can't we do the same with theology?
Well, I mean, I would disagree with you on the whole morality aspect of it. I mean, we can understand, like, why we as a species tend to lean more towards morality or have this empathetic drive. I think that more or less relies on our societal behavior and just our behavior in general as we evolve. So, I mean, I think that as far as morality goes, and the fact that even within, like, Christianity and Catholicism, which they're the same thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to break those two up. But within Catholicism in general, the morality has changed vastly over, you know, the centuries. So,
Let me jump in here. I don't know what you mean by vastly. I think that there has been moral progress and development, a better understanding of morality. But just because our applications and understanding of morality changes over time, that doesn't show that morality is not objective or that it doesn't have a divine foundation. Mathematics is objective. It exists outside of the human mind. It's an objective framework. Yet we had a better understanding of mathematics and mathematical progress the more and more that we study it. And I think the same is true of morality, that morality is objective, independent of human minds and human convention. But morality is strange, stranger than mathematics. Mathematics can be strange. That there are certain facts in the world, and science proves lots of facts. Like I said before, you know, science proves that, you know, the Earth is round, though some people on YouTube deny this. And I have a podcast where I actually take that on, which is crazy. So there's physical facts about the world, the universe, things like that. But I also think there are moral facts. So I agree with you. Science can show humans tended to act morally for various reasons, you know, evolutionary psychology, things like that, to explain why we engage in certain behaviors or their benefit to society. But I don't think science can answer the question of not just moral behavior, but moral foundations. Like I believe there's a moral fact like this. It is a fact, just as 2 + 2 = 4, it is a fact you ought to do good and avoid evil. Or it is a fact that it is always wrong to torture children for fun. Rape is always wrong. It is always good to love one's neighbor. You ought to do that. So for me as a believer, I see this and say, well, look, morality only makes sense in the context of persons. You know, a Scrabble board tipped over that forms words can't command me to do something. So if these moral truths command me and they have a universal quality to them, I'm only bound to them if they come from a universal objective source of morality. And if morality comes from persons, this source has to be a personal, universal, perfect source. And I think you can see that kind of where that moral argument could lead back to God. So for me, if we're going to talk about morality, I want to know what is the nature of these facts that, like, you know, rape is always wrong. This is just a fact that humans can't change. Where do these facts come from? What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, for one thing, the Israelites didn't think that rape was wrong. I mean, legit, God tells the Israelites to go and conquer people and to take women and young girls for the spoils of war. I mean, he lays out laws directly
John,
in the Old Testament.
John, I cover that in my book, Hard Sayings, that is not what happened. God did not command anyone to rape anybody. But the thing here is that what's interesting, whenever I bring up moral absolutes, many atheists rush to say, the Bible contradicts this. Well, even if it does, look, If that's their culture, why are you judging their culture? Instead, you understand there are universal moral truths that even people in the ancient world or today could not revoke. If those truths are universal and humans cannot change them, they must have a universal transcendent foundation, and that only makes sense in a universal perfect person, or who we call the source of morality and goodness, which would be God.
Gotta go, John. Thank you so much for your call. Trent Horn, thank you for a fine hour.
Thank you as well, Si.
TrentHornPodcast.com is where you can go to find out more about Trent and get access to his podcast. TrentHornPodcast.com. And don't forget about the brand new book, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. See you tomorrow, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.